Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of B2B Marketing Done Right. I'm excited for today's topic because it's a super relevant one. We're going to talk about how to turn your employees into a marketing channel with an employee advocacy program. Today's guest is Kip McKay, who is the Global Content Manager at Basis Technologies. And he's going to share all the ins and outs about the program that they have just launched. Kip, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't given you an easy topic.
No.
But I know that you have some great insights.
Let's hope.
Nice one. Hey, so to set the scene for this conversation, can you tell us a little bit about Basis Technologies and your role there?
Sure. Basically, we offer a bunch of products that help SAP's customers make changes to their kind of critical SAP systems easier, faster, and safer using automations and predictive analysis and so that. I lead content and digital marketing at a global level. Specifically by that, I mean across the Americas, EMEA, and APJ markets. I run our employee advocacy program. Been doing it for about a year or a year and a half almost. And yeah, excited to talk about it.
Yeah, super interesting. So over the past few years, I mean, there has been a lot of talk about personal branding, LinkedIn influencers, you name it. And I feel that more and more companies have started to realize that they can expand their reach and build brand trust by enabling their employees to start sharing content on LinkedIn. But I also see that for most companies, it's a hell of a job, given all the other priorities that they have. So what would you say were the main reasons for your team to actually say, hey, let's do it?
Yeah, I think being a niche player in a niche space was a big driver for it. Because of our kind of connection to SAP, there's a lot of limitations in what you can say in your marketing messaging as a brand, right? And so your employees are kind of untapped potential there that are associated with your brand and very much exist under that brand umbrella. But being individuals, they have more flexibility and have the cover of like personal point of view. So using them as a channel and empowering them with their own kind of messaging abilities, it made a lot of sense to kind of give us more leeway with our own messaging and topics we want to talk about and our own POV. Another thing I think like many people have is a huge amount of internal expertise. The age-old question of how do you surface that and how do you get it out in front of the right people? And LinkedIn for us, as it is for many B2B organizations, is where the right audience is hanging out, especially if you want to target more senior people who will not pick up your phone call. They will not answer your email. They're really hard to pin down at events. LinkedIn is the place to be for that, or one of them at least. You know, those three kind of factors made the employee advocacy program make sense and worth doing. And it's not a light lift. It's a big thing. And there's a lot of human psychology involved in it as well. It has done a lot for us. And I'm happy to share more about that.
Yeah, brilliant. And the point that you mentioned about executive buy-in, that one is so important because otherwise you're just not able to get this off the crown. So maybe let's talk about that because, hey, you came in a company, you said like, hey, this is a big opportunity for Basis Technologies. How did you get that executive buy-in to get this program rolling?
I'm sure most companies have something similar like this, but we do a monthly knowledge sharing workshop where someone in the team, somewhere in the world, will talk about some subject that they think would benefit other people. And I did one a few weeks, I think, after joining Basis Technologies on the value of social selling and LinkedIn and employee advocacy and what it can deliver. Like quite a lot of attention internally. It did pretty well. And I think the main factor was that session kind of attracted the interest of, as you say, some key leaders in the company who had either been part of that in previous companies or had always wanted to do more of that. They kind of gave me the support and the push because marketing can only do so much, right? Like you're never going to convince someone who's not in your team that this is more of a priority than what their boss is telling them to do. So to have a few key stakeholders dotted around the company who back you and are willing to, you know, put their neck on the line a little bit to pull the resources together for that and get their team involved has really been the kind of catalyst of being able to pull it off.
Yeah, love that. And obviously, hey, you run the broader content strategy at Basis Technologies. At a time, how did you think that the program would align with the broader content strategy in general?
I think it's actually came in at just the right time because around the time that I joined and I started this LinkedIn push, we were kind of pivoting our messaging away from being a very product-led content strategy towards very technical personas to a more kind of business value-driven strategy aimed at more commercial buyers and more economic buyers. And I think for those types of people, feature-led, product-led will only go so far. It's better for the champions who are the end user. Getting that buy-in higher up it's a challenge with that approach. What we kind of were realizing over time is that we have this wealth of expertise in-house. You know, like we were speaking to a company recently who said that they got more value in 5 minutes talking to a couple of people internally at our company versus a year at the big consultancies. And I won't name names, so don't we?
Oh, wow. Nice.
That pretty much encapsulates it. The employee advocacy program allowed us to develop these individuals with huge amounts of knowledge and bring them into our USP effectively. They're part of our solution. They're part of our offering, and our content strategy needs to reflect that. And it can't just be us talking about how great they are because we're the brand. They have to be interacting with other people in that space so that it is social, you know, on social media, and other people are there interacting with them, verifying that information either directly or indirectly. The other side of it, in what way it made sense for us, is that we have been doing a lot more account-based engagement lately in the last year, 6 months or so, at a regional level. And I think, you know, that whole LinkedIn employee advocacy program works really well as a marketing channel for ABM, because you're not necessarily building influencers at scale. You just want them to be able to engage and attract the right people on LinkedIn. And so if that's bottle manufacturers in Germany, it's probably not going to be like a huge audience you're targeting. But if you have this one person and you develop them within that space and within that area of expertise, because that's the kind of companies they know and that's the kind of companies they're working with, that can be a really powerful way to directly interact with those people. And you can connect with a bunch of people in an account for an account-based strategy and just engage with them and talk with them and build a relationship. And the posts and the messaging that you're creating through that person's account has a direct line to the accounts that you're targeting or broadly as a company commercially. So yeah, it kind of all worked out, and I think it made sense. I'm not saying it would make sense for every industry or every kind of go-to-market plan. Definitely with those, it's been a key asset.
What I really like about that approach is that it's based around a strategy where you say people like to connect with people, right? People do business with people they know, like, and trust. And a selling strategy and an employee advocacy program does exactly center around that. I think it's super powerful. And maybe we can talk about the program in more detail. So how does your program specifically support your employees in building their presence on LinkedIn?
Yeah, I think it depends on the type of person we're approaching. And this has been a bit of a lesson as we go on what works for different people. So the first is we've done a few training sessions with people. I think one of the big things we've tried to get across, because I do think social selling, employee advocacy has to be internally driven. I don't think it's something marketing can push on people with an iron fist. And I ethically don't agree that they should. But we've run a lot of sessions on how the LinkedIn algorithm works so that people understand the value in them engaging with posts within a certain time frame or what kind of thing they should do to engage with a post, etc., and the kind of potential expansion and reach that results of that. So you go in through the logical, you know, pursuit as well. But getting people bought in is one thing, getting them to actually act is another. So we've created a bunch of toolkits, you know, how to turn their profile into a landing page or how to turn their profile into something that's more about them if they want to make it personal or more about their own specific career. That's what we kind of do with the majority of people in our employee advocacy program. But we also have identified that there's various tiers of interest in getting involved, which you do have to work with. I've tried before to try and break through that and get everyone you know, to be an influencer, it just doesn't work. So identifying who are the most keen and who have the most potential and who are kind of maybe wanting to do more on LinkedIn and get involved, but are struggling a bit with bandwidth or direction on how to do that. And so for that, we do a more like one-to-one, kind of like a consultation white glove service to build up their profile.
Super interesting. And I think the point that you mentioned about finding the different tiers or identifying the different tiers, that's a really good one, right? Because you only have like limited resources and you can't get anyone involved, even if you want to, at the same level, right? How did you identify like the different tiers?
This is probably only possible of companies about certain size, but I interviewed everyone in the kind of key teams that we were targeting, not in a like a aggressive way, but more of just a conversation around their use of LinkedIn and their thoughts on social media more broadly and how they felt about what we'd been doing in marketing at like a very honest level. Do they think it's appropriate? Do they think it's, is it something they understand why we're doing it? And through that, you very quickly identify kind of three types of people. Our tiers were, I guess, from bottom to top, you have people who have no interest in LinkedIn. They maybe only use LinkedIn when they're looking for a new job, for example, or if a colleague messages them on there. Otherwise, they have no interest. And they might have no interest in any social media, for example. And then, you know, it's kind of a non-starter. Then you have the middle tier, which the vast majority of people are on, where they're happy to help out to an extent, but they have no interest in, you know, posting on LinkedIn regularly about themselves or becoming a thought leader, but they really get it. They understand why we're doing it. The training sessions we've done on the LinkedIn algorithm and social selling have convinced them. They want to play their part. Their challenge is, how do I play my part while not ignoring my other duties? And where does it lie in prioritization?
Yeah, it's a fair point because, I mean, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and I think something that came out of those interviews was, why would I prioritize something marketing is telling me to do over my boss? It's not in my P1 list. It's not my P2 list. Like, unless they tell me to do it, it can't be my priority. It's a nice to have or a nice to do when I get a spare couple minutes, which is completely fair, like completely understandable. And we just had those open conversations. And then from that, you do get the, it is again, a minority of people who are really well connected in the space that we want to be connected in because they have a, you know, a long career history. They worked at some of the big companies. So they have the audience already, or they have the potential to build the audience. They actively want to be posting more. They want to do videos, et cetera, on LinkedIn. They want to do more, but are just a bit swamped, or they need a bit more guidance. And that's when you kind of balance your resources. Okay, I'm going to identify these three people across the company and kind of commit a certain amount of time to them. Or as we've done recently, bring in external help to help increase that capacity and focus your efforts on them.
Love that. And I think a big thing to making this successful is also identifying the right topics to talk about, right? Because there is a balance between personal content and content that is actually relevant for your specific buyer. To what extent do you help your employees with picking the right topics to talk about? How do you check if the content that they are producing is actually on brand, is focusing on topics that your buyer actually cares about?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think something that has come up a lot when trying to help enable people across the company is imposter syndrome. And initially we started off trying to get people of their own volition to weigh in. So if we had, let's say we had a campaign that's launching on LinkedIn and we're asking people to share this from their personal accounts and kind of weigh in with their views, even though we know that they have really good insights and lots to deliver, they would often, when I was speaking to them, they were like, I want to talk about it, but I'm scared I'm off brand, or I'm scared that people will kind of not laugh at it, but think it's silly or it's not the right angle, and they're scared of even confrontation. Social media is a very confrontational place as well. So you're dealing with very complex human psychology here. There's a few things I think you can do to help with that. We do you give a little bit of internal kind of messaging frameworks and templates for people who are super hands-off in terms of they don't want to do a lot of the work themselves, they just want a kind of what's okay to say while representing the brand? So we provide that. For, again, it's all about tiering, right? For other people who want to be a bit more creative and want to take that kind of messaging framework and twist it a little bit themselves and maybe bring in an example that they have or something. A customer was working on this. They did it a different way. I want to bring that up. I think you can make yourself available, but you do have to be very careful with bandwidth that you're not making yourself too available because it's, as anyone knows, that's not very scalable. So again, working within these tiers, I think helps that. But to be honest, and this is maybe controversial, I don't know if everyone will agree with this, but I do think you should allow your, at least your main thought leaders or the people in your company, a degree of free rein from your brand. I think that's the value in an employee advocacy program, to be honest, because they can say things that your brand can't. And there is obviously a line, and that line is sometimes very high stakes in certain industries. Like if you work in the third sector for a charity and someone's saying something that goes off piece, it's, yeah, I understand. And in those situations, you've got to be very tightly reined. But for a lot of companies in the tech space, it would be pretty hard to go completely off brand to the point of damaging the brand. So I think keep an eye on it. But I would say it's better to encourage the kind of minority of confident thought leaders that are willing to do more rather than crack down on them. Like I've seen things before where someone who doesn't normally post designed their own carousel on LinkedIn, trying to be like talking you through a few things in our space that he thought was interesting. And it was not super on brand and looked a little funky, but it doesn't, I don't think it matters, right? It's social media. It's his personal social media. And it's, you know, it's not coming from a brand channel. So ultimately, it doesn't matter too much. And lots of people might disagree with that. You might disagree with that. But I do think you'll get more value out of being laxer with the reins than kind of being this iron fist of brand.
Even if you want to really check in on everything that's going on from your employees on LinkedIn, I mean, that will be a full-time job, right? So you simply don't have the time to track and manage, keep an eye on it all the time. Here comes the big question, I guess, like how do you measure the success of such a program? Because it's a lot of work, it's a lot of time, a lot of internal resources that you're putting into it, because when your employees are writing posts or engaging on LinkedIn, I mean, that is also time that it could have worked on business development or client projects. So how do you measure the success of your campaign? Are there any specific KPIs that you focus on?
Yeah, we do a lot of UTM tracking with it. So at different degrees of specificity. So the general population of the company, they'll share UTM tag for anything they're posting as part of a big coordinated multi-channel campaign of some guide we're publishing or whatever it may be. And so we track the kind of volume that comes through that, but then also at a kind of account level, as we're saying, we do a lot of account based, seeing where that's coming into play and influence. And to be honest, it's not very high volume. And I don't think that's too concerning because it's not going to be one of your main channels like email that's pulling in a lot of the volume. But I do think the people that come in through that and have that tag against their name that you can see in your back end, there's a slightly higher level of intent because you know there's a degree of personal connection from the channel that they access that for. And so I think there's a level of quality. So yeah, we sometimes use two types of UTMs or two sources, one for posts and one for messages. The posts could be a further degree of separation from that person, but if it's a message and our employee has messaged that content to someone, that you could kind of infer a bit of more, like a stronger connection. With the kind of LinkedIn champions, as I've been calling them, in the company, we do a bit more specificity. So we give each of them their own kind of list of UTMs, and that will be on both their profile and any posts that they do. So we can track specifically like the people who are visiting that page, it's almost like a landing page at that point. Any content within there or kind of links to our website that they're finding through that person's LinkedIn profile, we can track that. We can track it from their posts as well. And that gives us a bit more confidence that we're kind of investing in the right people in the company. Because again, it's very high touch when you are working at that one-to-one level with these LinkedIn champions. You do need that a higher degree of clarity in what you're doing and the impact that it's having and on your, the accounts that you're targeting or whatever strategy you use. It's not the easiest thing to track specifically. And I think you can get lost in volume. You know, the brand account actually outperformed this individual who was posting about the same topic. So yeah, maybe because the brand account has, you know, 10,000 followers and that person has 1,000. But, you know, the brand account is a brand account. It's people see millions of brand posts all the time. It's not a human. Whereas with the LinkedIn people, are the people in our company when they're posting, the people who see that and interact, they know, they feel like they know that person. And that point of view and that content is coming from a person rather than a brand. There's definitely things you can do
and even
contextualize it.
Yeah. Even when someone doesn't engage with a post, I mean, there are so many people lurking on LinkedIn without ever liking a post or providing a comment. I mean, most of our clients have never engaged with one of our posts.
Exactly.
And I know this is the same for other agencies and other companies as well. So that's also good to realize. But that also makes it harder to track the actual success of such a program, right?
I think it does make it tricky, you know, the nature of social media, LinkedIn, to track exactly who's seeing what and who's being influenced. But I also think like the pursuit of being data-driven shouldn't stop you from investing in certain channels, because I think it's just the inevitable nature of some channels is that it's quite hard. It doesn't mean it's not working. Yeah. And I do think work with what you've got. I don't think it's a reason to discount a channel for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, you're investing a lot of time and money in building someone's brand and an audience. As you mentioned, not for everyone, because you use different employee tiers. What happens if someone that you've invested a lot of time and money in leaves the company? And to what extent should companies take this possibility into account when they roll out like an employee advocacy program?
Yeah, it's a very real threat. I obviously won't mention any company names, but I, through a content marketing network I am part of, I know that, I think it was a couple of years ago, a large company bought a smaller company because their brand was so strong. However, what that small company had done had invested their brand in their CEO, and it was all about him as a person, really put him at the forefront of everything and put a lot of investment behind him. And after the acquisition, the CEO decided to leave, and so too did a lot of the value of that brand, because it was all around him and they were basically starting from scratch. So it's a very good point to raise, because I think it can be devastating if you invest in one person too much. I think what I would say is one of the best solutions to mitigate against that risk is that you do have to have more than one person. You need to identify a few people in the company. And even if you're not giving everyone exactly the same amount of one-to-one treatment, I think you need to have multiple players in the game there and building up their profiles, because it's always a risk that you're going to lose one of them. But you can then repopulate in situations where you're doing a webinar or some sort of podcast or something. You have people who have experience and they have, maybe it's a smaller audience, but they still have a developed audience and a reputation that you can pull into the limelight after that. So I think, you know, by all means, run a pilot with one person and figure out what works, but definitely don't stop there and just stick to that person. You do need multiple people. And as I was saying, when we started this conversation, you know, there's a lot of benefits to that too, because if you work on a global scale, like we do at Basis, it matters culturally to have a bunch of different people around the world, because the European figure you have might not resonate in the Americas and vice versa. Or if you work in multiple languages like we do, we operate in German as well, it's important that you have a German speaker or two German speakers who you're kind of building up. So I think, you know, multiple advantages to investing in a lot of, not a lot, but a few people as your kind of champions in your employee advocacy program. But definitely don't just after one, because yeah, I've seen the destruction that that can cause.
Yeah, great example. And I think all the more reason to hedge that risk by investing in multiple profiles, right? Especially on a global scale, like you mentioned. That's a super interesting insight. To what extent, looking at the people in your tier one, so the ones that you're really pushing and that are also really invested in making this a success, have you seen any like remarkable traction or success in building their profile and over time, seeing a lot of engagement and interaction?
Yeah, I think we do our kind of like quarterback, if you will, in the employee advocacy program is our CTO, David Lees. But I would be very like hesitant to give full credit to the employee advocacy program. I think it's very much part of a piece of a puzzle, like all of your kind of go-to-market strategies should be. What makes him fundamentally a thought leader in his space and, you know, particularly successful is his knowledge and his expertise that he's built up over a long career. And through that and through some work he's done on social media, some work he's done with our PR agency, he's been able to get a lot of features in kind of industry specific publications and smaller ones like CIO, ERP Today. But he's also gotten Forbes and things like that, which has given us a lot of material to work with on LinkedIn in his advocacy program. So I think it's very much like he is the source of that authority, and our job as social sellers and as enablers of our employees and our team is to work with that and amplify it and maximize the use out of the channel, so that when he is doing these incredible things and when he is coming up with new models or new ideas on certain topics, that we're able to use his platform to expand that reach and to maximize engagement with it. That's where I would say the success comes from. And as I mentioned, you know, we're continuing to invest in him because we have seen that success in the past with this consultant, RB Lee. But it's, yeah, exciting to see where it goes. You know, it's, you know, very much like a journey, not speaking from the other side. We've had a lot of bumps in the roads, you know, to get to a point where we have some sort of success with an employee advocacy program. And I'm sure if you asked me in another few years, I would have learned a bunch of things I'm doing now is wrong as well. I think it's just, you know, figuring out what you've got, working within a framework that makes sense for your bandwidth, but works with the psychology of your team and their prioritization as well.
Yeah. Let's talk briefly about these bumps in the road, because obviously I can imagine that with a program at this scale, not having it done before, at a company that is challenging, right? I mean, especially when you're running other programs beside this as well. So what have been like the biggest challenges in rolling out this program?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that definitely I wouldn't do again. At one point, I think a mistake was targeting everyone. So instead of taking this tiered approach and being kind of smart about resource allocation, really just trying to get everyone to weigh in on every topic. And that is just, it's a waste of time and energy for a start, because it's never going to work for the reasons we've discussed throughout this. But another part is when you do that, the only real way to make it work is you start writing posts for people to post at scale, which has a very quick end life, I can assure you. And again, like you say, quickly all of your time spent on LinkedIn, and because it's not authentic, you know, you're writing, we're marketers and we kind of default into brand speak quite a lot. People see right through it and it doesn't work. And that's what I'm saying. It's like a waste of time and energy for you and for them, for the people who engage with those posts. So that was very much, I think, the big lesson. I, at previous roles in previous companies, so not part of this employee advocacy program, have definitely done that big mistake we were just talking about around over-investing in one person or a couple people. And then, yeah, when they do leave or suddenly they have different priorities and they don't want to do it anymore, or they want to focus on other things, you're kind of at a loss. And it was a bit of a waste of time when you think about all the hours you spent kind of building them up and building up their reputation. That could be quite hard. So yeah, there's a lot of bumps in the road. And I think another one that's definitely worth mentioning is the ethical side of it, because you can really want people to want something and want them to do it. The fear of mine always is that I'm applying pressure and that they have to kind of fall in line with marketing by posting on LinkedIn. I don't think it's a productive way of looking at it. And I don't think it is a good thing to do, because people have their own relationships with social media and with their own sense of self and how much they expose themselves to the public. And, you know, we do have to respect that. And so I think that has been something over time. I'm like, yeah, that's definitely the right approach. And it's, again, why you have to talk to your team and figure out who they are as a person and where they fall in these tiers and who you shouldn't apply pressure to, because they're never going to change their mind. It will only damage your relationship with them to push it. And then who actively does want to do more and will welcome your input.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I applaud your consistency with this, because I think a lot of organizations will quit after 3 to 4 months when they don't see like that steady growth, which is hard on LinkedIn, especially with the decrease in organic reach. It's all about consistency and really investing it for the long term, right? So yeah, love that approach regarding that. Looking back on this project and all the learnings that you got from it, what advice would you give to other companies looking to start their own employee advocacy program?
I guess to anyone listening or watching this is to probably not take what I'm saying as, you know, the Bible, and it has worked a bit for Basis Technologies and therefore it will work for me, because I do think it's a very custom solution. You know, there's things like industry, like I was mentioning earlier, there's, you know, if you work in the charity sector, third sector, climate tech, whatever, you got to be really careful with what you're allowing employees to kind of say on behalf of the brand. And therefore, the advice I'm giving might not be correct. I think you have to work with the resources that you have and the kind of go-to-market strategy that you have, and talk to the people in your company, because depending on the type of company you're at, whether it's a startup, a scale-up, a very established company, the demographics within that organization of, you know, where people are, the stage of life, their age, they're going to respond very differently. And I would really urge people, as a starting point, I had these conversations a year in to the employee advocacy program, like talking to people and figuring out their view on it and what they thought about LinkedIn in general. And as soon as I did it, I was like, oh, okay, yep, I see that, where we were maybe going wrong or where we could go in the future that is the right place. So I do think that is worth doing, so that you kind of shape your employee advocacy program around the people in your company, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, right? Like, it's all through them. It's all done by them. It has to come from them and be an internal push. It can't be external.
What a great end, Kit. I couldn't have asked for a better conclusion. No, honestly, thanks so much for joining, and thanks for sharing all these insights.
Cheers, thanks.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to this episode of B2B Marketing Done Right. I hope you got some valuable insights out of it. And if there's a specific topic that you would like me to cover on this podcast, just send me a message on LinkedIn. I would love to hear from you there. See you next week. Cheers.